to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
Welcome.
This is Zara.
This is Taz.
And this is Zara.
During our last podcast, you were traveling internationally. You got kicked out of a country, so you chose to go to another country. So you're back from your travels. How was it?
Yeah. Isn't it funny to say that Dubai accepted me?
Oh, yeah, but then if you've been to Dubai, you know how scandalous that country is. Secretly scandalous.
When I was going to go to Dubai, a friend of mine was like, yeah, the only way to sum up Dubai is to say it's really cool and really weird. And then when I went, I was like, oh, yeah, if I was to not address any of its complexity, I would say, yeah, that's a weird place, but it's cool, but it's weird. Because there's like slave labor and people getting accidentally beaten to death at work. I'm not sure how the adverb accidentally factors into a beating to death, but that happens there. And also, like, we went skiing and kissed a penguin in -5-degree weather in one of their gigantic malls.
I heard you broke your butt on that adventure.
I did. I broke my butt. Because, well, I thought I could ski, and it turns out I can't.
I think the funniest thing about this is you ended up going to, like, a desert and hurt yourself skiing. Like yeah. What are the chances? But then you think, oh, it's Dubai, so the chances are pretty high.
Because, you know, then you have to factor in the statistics of ridiculous wealth when you own oil money, and then the statistics of you skiing in a desert landscape are much higher.
What was it like to be in this country with your white man?
It helped so much, Taz.
I heard he got hit on.
Yeah, okay. So this is in my infidel husband column that's coming out this month.
Yeah.
Where we were going out around Dubai with, it's me, my infidel husband, who had to convert, by the way, yeah. So that we could travel safely for our own purposes. And yeah, so we're in Dubai and we're looking for like fake handbags with me, Duncan, my dad, and my mom. And I, you know, I'm like, is it cool to get fake handbags? Am I subverting like the fashion designer industry that is like always like stripping women of their bodies and like fat and being like, I'm not going to give you money. I'm going to buy the fake version. And then a friend of mine wrote me and was like, actually, no, because it's child slave labor that makes fake designer handbags. And I was like, oh, bummer. So we're like traveling through Dubai and like all their blocks are like European blocks.
Yeah.
You know, they're like short and people drive like Italians, like they're like crazy drivers. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm out there like stopping traffic, putting my hand up because I'm in like full teacher mode, like stop car, stop Range Rover that is about to run over my husband and my grandma in a wheelchair. And while Duncan is like rolling around my grandma, then I guess he gets propositioned.
By who?
By a prostitute, because there are prostitutes in Dubai that just walk around.
Wait, so he has your grandmother in a wheelchair, and he gets propositioned to while he's pushing your grandmother in a wheelchair?
Yeah. Yeah, and then he's pushing my grandma in a wheelchair, and he gets propositioned to, and then my mom comes to, like, stop them, but then my mom's now hanging out with these prostitutes, and my mom's dressed like a hipster, and my mom looks European, and this other guy sees my mom with Duncan and these prostitutes and comes up to my mom and is like, hey, how much?
Wow.
And tries to shake her hand because, like, in Dubai, the process of accepting a, like, proposition from a prostitute or from a John is to shake their hand.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is very businesslike.
And who wants to shake their hands, honestly?
Apparently, if you're going to have sex with someone, the beginning step is to shake their hand.
I've been going about this dating thing all wrong.
You got it totally backwards. And here I thought you start with a blowjob. Is that too far for our audience? I don't know. If we just like lost a whole demographic. Anyways, while this guy is propositioning my mom and Duncan's getting propositioned, I am, like, trying to halt traffic so that they could get across the street safely. And this woman comes up to me and asks me if I'm traffic control. And I was like, okay, hold up.
You know what this is?
What?
This is basically like revenge for you getting hit on in the past like two episodes and like them giving you that huge, ridiculous ring, your wedding ring. This is kind of like the reverse of that.
Anyway.
So we've been doing great media.
In episode 5, here we are, like listened to by 42 million listeners on the BBC's wrap up of the best of the week's.
Yeah.
Global Nation interviews.
We're very thankful for all of our new listeners and thankful for people that are listening to our podcast. But something that happens with getting a lot of media attention is we get a lot of other kinds of attention too. I have a comment that was on someone's Facebook page that I'm going to read that said, having a voice and expressing yourself is great, but there's nothing to be proud of about eating pork, drinking alcohol, and having premarital sex. Sinning is okay and is natural. We are all weak and full of sins, but advertising your sin like it's nothing without any shame, I am sorry to say, but that is disgusting. So, and this was written by a man, and he has shamed us. Shame, shame.
Shame on you. Forgive me, Father Taz, for I have sinned.
And usually I don't respond to comments. I've been getting a lot of like, I've been getting hate on the internet for 10 years because I've been a blogger for a very long time. So I kind of let it roll off. But this one really hit home for me for some reason. It didn't hit home, but it like really bothered me because of the word shame. And I think one of the things that like mm-hmm. I was thinking about growing up was like how when I was growing up, how the word shame was used by parents to kind of like put me in my place. And I think that's what really bothered me. There was something so infantilizing and patriarchal about this man telling us that we need to have shame. And I feel like when it led to a longer, bigger conversation, just this whole idea of like, do men get shamed the way women get shamed? I think not. I think women, it's very gendered. I think women get shamed in this very like women are supposed to be shamed for what they do, or young boys are supposed to be shamed. But like, who is he to tell us adult women to have shame?
I think honestly, apart from my shaming the male world, I don't think men get shamed.
I don't think men get shamed either. Especially not.
If not for me and my lone activities, doing my best to shame men as often as I can, I don't think anybody else would be carrying that torch.
I think what...
It's just me.
One of the things that I wrote on my Facebook in response to this was about, like, do we ask ISIS to have shame? Or did we ask that Chicago imam to have shame?
No, it's not a word that we use with men. I think you're totally right. Yeah. It's a way of putting women down. It's associated with your body. It's a very physical experience to feel shame, and experience shame is extremely physical.
Yeah.
It's different to say I'm embarrassed, you know, and Brené Brown talks about this. Everybody's favorite TED talker talks about how there's a difference between experiencing embarrassment and experiencing the feeling of shame.
Yeah.
Shame is murder. I mean, I am astonished by this man who would write this because it sounds like his version of God keeps a tally.
Yeah.
Right? Of the sins that you are expressing and, you know, sounding proud of, or just, you know, advertising the way that he says. His God's keeping a tally, and shaming somebody, I feel like shame kills. Shame really kills people. People commit suicide over shame. People shut themselves off and it damages families. Shame is a killer, and it's a much bigger sin, I would say, than eating pork. And if this guy's God is keeping tally, then I am concerned for him because his public shaming tally is rather high right now.
Yeah. Remember how in Ramadan your points are supposed to be like sevenfolds? This guy needs to like really step it up during Ramadan for the sevenfold.
He's going to have to convert a lot of people to Islam to get millions and millions of heaven points. You know what else I love about this is people shaming you for eating pork when I'm the one that eats pork.
I know. I don't eat pork. I don't eat pork. I don't drink alcohol.
That's my favorite
I don't do drugs.
Thing.
Never have any of them. But somehow I'm getting looped into this shameness. But you know what? I'm cool with being friends with people that do that stuff. So I don't know. I feel like that's really stupid. It's been annoying me.
Yeah, I'm sorry, is it annoying when your picture pops up and underneath it says, pork eating, alcohol drinking, Muslims talk about being good and bad.
You know what? I'm willing to do that for our friendship, Zara. I am willing to take that bullet for you.
Oh, I want to throw an idiom in that I don't know how to use right now.
An American one.
You're falling on your sword for me, Taz. I don't even know if I'm using that right. So... This really connects to talking about sex.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is a big part of what he's talking about. Premarital sex. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about premarital sex. If you're going to have it, but don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. But young Muslims need sex education, says an infographic from a study done by the Heart Women and Girls Project. You can also find this on our Good Muslim, Bad Muslim website. I love this quote from the article. It says, how a young woman feels about herself has a significant impact on the choices she makes about her health and her body. This is so true. And it feels so synchronous that all of this should come up, because I remember when I did lose my virginity to this guy, I had a really tumultuous relationship with him. And there are a lot of ways where I felt like I was treated poorly, that a lot of it was due to my just not knowing the kind of treatment that I deserved or didn't deserve in a relationship. And it meant so much to me when I was able to finally talk to my father about my relationships, when, you know, I told him about my husband, who then was my whitey white infidel boyfriend at the time. And my dad said, you know, yeah, you don't deserve to be treated the way that, you know, these other guys have treated you, after I told him these stories, these dating stories that I'd had. And hearing that coming from my father meant so much. Do I need to expand on that?
No. I think it's really beautiful to hear that. Like, I've never been able to have those kinds of conversations with my father. And when my mother was alive, I wasn't able to have those conversations with her too. So I think it's really, so what you have with your father is something really special.
I mean, the fact that I can, you know, tell my dad these stories and then hear from, you know, his mouth, like, no, this is how men need to be treating you. And then it makes me sad that so many young women, Muslim or not Muslim, because of shame, don't tell their parents about ways that they are being treated poorly, whether it's just the ways that they're being treated in a relationship or assault, because they're too ashamed.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've been getting a lot of emails from young women, and I think we've gotten some emails through our info line as well, through people in the community who are experiencing a lot of shame with their sexuality, sexual preferences, and because they're not able to have these conversations with their peers, it's been really difficult. So I think however we can help facilitate that. If you have emails, you have advice you want to send to us, send it on over.
We get a lot of advice that's like, we're really worried about you two girls and we're not sure if you're actually Muslim. Ugh. Here's some advice. I keep typing if that's what fuels you. I'm less interested in those emails. But hey, if that's what you need. But this email that you're talking about, I'm really glad that we're going to be able to also share.
Yeah, I got an email from a listener reader who is a Muslim American woman, and she's always been devout and a Muslim, but she just entered into a relationship. I'm going to read excerpts of her letter. She said, I'm in a relationship with a Palestinian man in my class who came from a Muslim background but identifies as deist. We were friends for about a year and a half. Eventually, we opened up to each other and about our feelings, and we have been together for a few months now. Until I met him, I never really considered a non-Muslim man as an option for myself. I just thought that I would be too fundamentally different from a non-Muslim for any relationship to work, and I've always been taught that it is wrong to marry a non-Muslim. She goes on to talk about how she doesn't think it's really compromising her faith, and then she says, he, for example, likes to go out and drink as a way to socialize and unwind. And although I love to go out and go dancing, I don't drink. It may seem trivial, but I think that's just one example of how our lifestyles are different. And I wonder if that's an issue you ever faced in any relationships. I guess I'm asking how you've come to be comfortable with your identity and your understanding of what it means to be a Muslim, especially if it might be quite different from the mainstream ideal of what a Muslim looks like.
This is where I want like a movie teaser that can just like do a quick montage that we can like send to this girl of my life up until now.
When I got this email, I was floored. It was like this 700-word email. I was like, how am I supposed to answer this? I mean, like the last part, right? Like she's asking, How are you comfortable with your identity? And that's, oh my gosh, that's so hard because it's just like.
That's the whole podcast. That's our whole
podcast. It's just life.
You know, the good and bad of it. Yeah, it's just exactly. Life. I mean,
Like, as you grow older, you become comfortable with who you are. You become less reliant on, like, how other people see you to shape who you are as a person. And I think that's kind of at the core of that identity thing. But like the question about like being in a relationship with a non-Muslim person, like I don't drink, and I've dated lots of men who do drink. I do like to go dancing, but I don't drink. So what has that been like for me? I don't know. It's, I don't know how to answer this. Zara, what was it like when you first dated?
Well, first of all, I want to answer this with the most obvious response. The best way to answer this is with an acronym. YOLO. I think that this question is an important one just for relationships, period. What I love about this question is something that you and I often have to shed light on in our interviews is that even though we're both progressive Muslim women, we're entirely different. And even though you're, you know, marrying or with another Muslim person, doesn't mean that you guys practice the same way or have the same beliefs and traditions.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because the Muslim men that I've dated, they didn't practice the same way that I practiced. No. They were Muslim, but then, you know, they had different practices. So I think you just have to approach each person that you're in a relationship with as if they are their own being. And I don't know, like, I really like people's spirituality is really important to me. So that really mattered with the men that I've dated, that they had some sort of spiritual practice, that they believed in God, that they like had faith was really important to me. That was more important than if they drank or didn't drink, right? Like, I don't think the lifestyle stuff, like, yeah, that's important, but like what's at their core and what's in their heart and what's in their like their values to how they are as a human being is that's so much more important to me.
And what's in your own? It would be speculation of me to say that it sounds like part of what might be at the root of this issue is that maybe she is against him drinking.
Yeah.
And doesn't want him to drink. That's very different than, you know, my husband drinks and yeah, you know, he does this thing and that's not for me. It's different than to say like, I think it's wrong what you're doing and it bothers me that you do it. It's a very different, challenging conversation. My husband is atheist, and, you know, he's my infidel husband, like I say in my column. And the reason why that works is because it works for he and I. I drink. My husband doesn't drink. He's not Muslim. I eat pork. My husband doesn't eat pork. He's not Muslim. He doesn't eat it for political reasons. And he doesn't like it when I eat pork. And we actually have to have those conversations because he feels that it's wrong for me to. And apparently so does Mother Jones. That's become an issue. I can't call myself the pork-eating Muslim as much. I have shame around that.
I think one of the other things about, especially with drinking, is I've dated some men who have had drinking problems. And I think when it becomes a problem, that's when it becomes a big issue for me.
That's a whole separate issue.
Yeah, it's a whole separate issue. And I think that's just something to keep in mind, just like understanding that, you know, abuse is a real issue when it comes to drugs and alcohol, and if people partake in that lifestyle and it becomes damaging, that's pretty bad. So if anyone else has any advice that they want from us, either you want us to address it in our podcast or you want us to address it in our columns, please feel free to send us emails. We love getting emails. We loved getting this email and being able to respond to it. We might not answer it in the podcast, but we might answer it in our columns. So please continue sending over the emails.
Taz has her radical love column. I have my infidel husband column, both on the Love Inshallah blog. Inshallah, we'll hear more of your voices. And that, Taz, actually connects really well to the conversation we wanted to have about the interview between Pushing Hoops and Amir Rahman, the comedian who went viral with his show Fear of a Brown Planet.
Yeah, I love this podcast. Pushing Hoops is Aisha Siddiqui. She is an editor somewhere. She's a writer and editor. And she has a podcast out that in her second podcast, she interviews Amir Rahman.
And the reason why I feel like it connects is because a lot of what their conversation about is about Muslim identity And how do we hold on to our identity as the other? What do we do with that when we're also dealing with the mainstream and pop culture? And that comes up in relationships. It comes up at work. It comes up in the opportunities that come our way. It's an ongoing conversation, and part of why it makes it really hard to answer these questions.
Yeah, I think one of the things I loved about the podcast was they were talking about what it means to be an artist and a creative in the, you know, in today's society. And what does it mean to be an artist of color or an artist that like speaks to the margins? And it was so, so empowering. I think I'm going to make it a rule that I have to listen to this podcast once a month, because I think it's kind of like what I needed as a creative type to hear.
Yep. It was, I mean, this podcast is like my morning sermon. I'm going to just make it my alarm clock, listening to Aisha Siddiqui talk about survival scripts.
Yeah, what was the highlight? What was your takeaway from the conversation?
My biggest takeaway was, as a fellow comic, listening to Amir Rahman really validate a lot of my experiences with comedies, you know, bro culture, and the feeling that I've always had where I'm like, you know, I'm saying no to this great opportunity because they want me to be naked and I'm not going to get naked right now. You know, and am I missing out on a great opportunity? What am I doing? Should I just go for this? What's the right thing to do? And hearing him talk about his experiences with that, you know, really gave me the ability to look at my experiences with a new lens and kind of lift a lot of the shame I had for myself, you know, not being a good enough comedian, not being go-getter enough, you know, saying no to opportunities that have come my way.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the, like, institutional whiteness that exists in comedy circles and comedy structure.
I just want to highlight that I didn't say no to not being naked, if anyone wants to still offer that up.
I think my highlight from this conversation was really, I mean, one of the things I've been struggling with lately has been trying to figure out, like, how do I identify as an activist artist? So how do I create art to push a message? And I think that's a lot of why this particular podcast resonated with me. Particularly, I like the aspect that they were talking about. They were talking about, like, near the end of the podcast, one of their closing topics was speaking to the choir and how everyone's saying mm-hmm. that their art is speaking to the choir. But then they push back on that, saying, like, well, we need to be speaking to the choir because our choir doesn't have that many things to grab a hold of. So we need to create those survival scripts for our community. And I thought that was so powerful because I feel like that's what I'm trying to do with, you know, the art I create or the writing that I do. Like, I am trying to, like, find those girls, like the one that just wrote us that letter in the email. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, those are the ones I'm trying to reach out to.
Yeah, and hearing them say that the resistance is constant, there's a way that, you know, sometimes that can feel overwhelming and disheartening. But in this instance, for me, hearing that, it was really empowering because it felt like, oh, it's not because I'm failing. It's because I have to continue to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we'll be sharing the podcast on our page. We encourage everyone to, like, listen to it. We love it. It's so good. So, so good.
Make it your alarm clock.
Make it your alarm clock. It's a 40-minute alarm clock. It
takes me a long time to wake up. That segues very easily into our next segment because we have to talk about Bin Laden on Tinder. This is our segment, Creeping Sharia.
Yeah.
Creeping Sharia is where we talk about and highlight ways that Islamistan, the Muslim world that everyone refers to that is taking over, is working. Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, so Bin Laden was in the media recently because there is that expose article that came out that talked about how Bin Laden wasn't dumped in the ocean, but he was, you know, completely shot up and bits and pieces of him are scattered, were dropped out of a helicopter. I think that's what the article said. It was I forgot who wrote it, but we'll link to the
conspiracy.
We'll link to the full article. But because of he was in the media, there was all these love letters that were found from Bin Laden to his wives. So some reporter, I think on Gawker, decided to take excerpts of these love letters and to put it up on Tinder. And can I just say how jealous I am of this title of this article? It's called Jihad Me at Hello. Like, that's totally going on another Muslim Valentine's Day cards. Because everyone that knows me, I'm always looking for Muslim funny puns that can go on Muslim Valentine's Day cards.
It's one of my favorite of yours.
I haven't used Jihad Me at Hello, though, but so I got to put that in.
I personally love I Have a Jihad On For You.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of my favorites of all time.
It is a popular one.
I get a little bit jealous, though, because I didn't know that if I was a wife of Bin Laden, that he would send me love letters. I didn't know that that was a thing that I could have from being one of his wives.
I'm sure there's going to be some hipster publisher out there that gets these love letters and publishes it into a book.
Oh, God. That is so weird.
I know.
That is so weird. When you posted this on Facebook, I was like, all of this disturbs me. I don't know what to say. This guy was actually like getting dates on Tinder, and some people were turned off and some people were like totally into it and were like, hey, yeah, let's ride this. Where are you at? Bin Laden.
I actually don't know how the article ended. I just remember it being an experiment. So I wonder what would have happened if the journalist actually went to a date and was like, hey, that wasn't me. This is me.
And they'd be like, yeah, I'm not as
yeah, right?
Because you aren't the guy you that I thought ISIS, everyone was so,
or Al-Qaeda. Taking.
You're not the leader of Al-Qaeda that everyone's taking bits of to make relics of to have pilgrimages. And that's just not as much of a draw knowing that you're a temp, you know?
So do you have a creeping Sharia?
Lindsay Lohan carries copy of the Quran in the British tabloids Telegraph. Or is it? No, Daily Mail. The Telegraph is the legit
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so
right?
I think Lindsay Lohan was out doing community service. And while she was out doing community service, she like always wears these nice like outfits. She dresses up for community service. I think this was for like a drunk driving accident that she had out here a ways back.
Well, I'm glad she's turning to the Quran.
Yeah, so now she goes around. She was spotted holding a Quran in her arms while she's doing community service. And I swear to God, my initial instinct was that Quran is hollowed out and there are drugs and alcohol in it. Though that's...
You know, that is so unfair to Lindsay.
I know.
Because here she is rehabilitating and it's clear, you know, she's got a Quran that's translated with pictures for her. Is that mean? Am I being mean to Lindsay? I don't know.
You sound kind of like you're being a mean girl.
I'm being a total mean girl to Lindsay. I love everything about this. First of all, I want to say I predicted this. I have a video. It's called Islam, America's New Buddhism. It'll be up on our website because a lot of people don't know this. 60 years ago, Buddhism was called by the FBI the highest threat to national security, the religion that was the highest threat to national security in this nation. Yeah, Buddhism. Hmm. Everybody's favorite non-religion, supposedly. Which, like, you know, gives me so much hope because I'm like, okay, well, in 60 years, it's not going to be Lindsay Lohan. It'll be Madonna. And Madonna will still be alive because it's Madonna. And our producer, Quincy, just, like, sent us a note that says Buddhism is a religion. Which I'm mentioning because... Yes, it is. And I'm so sick of people in San Francisco. Whenever I do that joke, they come up to me and they're like, you know, Buddhism is not really a religion. It's really more just like a way of life. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure religions sort of give you a way of life to follow. I think that's kind of the job of a religion. I think what you're talking about is appropriation. But anyway, 60 years later, look at what happened to Buddhism. It's all over everybody's shirts in San Francisco. White ladies love it. Islam, this could be
okay,
us.
So this is what I was thinking. You know how you said it's all over shirts? So you know how, like, in Hollywood, Kabbalah was, like, a really big thing and everyone wore those, like, red bracelets?
Yes.
Like, this could be Muslims' Kabbalah. Like, we need to start marketing, like, creating jewelry, Muslim-y jewelry, and marketing it to Hollywood.
That's what I'm saying. Well, we already know from our last podcast that if anyone wears an Allah necklace, they'll meet a homeless man that wants a drink from them, a smoothie.
Yeah, I will not buy everyone a drink if they spot my Allah necklace, but yes.
Check out episode 4. You'll understand what this callback is about. That segues really well into our next segment, Awkward Ask a Muslim, because that was Taz's Awkward Ask a Muslim, wearing her Allah necklace and having a homeless guy hit on her, but then ask her.
Which you can actually see animated on our website, because an awesome listener animated it for us.
Yeah, that was super cool. The animation is hysterical.
So funny.
So, Awkward Ask a Muslim, what's your moment?
Okay, mine is, how do you say your name? I'm only, okay, so I'm mentioning this because we've been doing a lot of media audio podcast, so people want to get our names right. I just think it's really silly because my last name's Ahmed, which is like kind of an offshoot of like Muhammad. And there's no real proper way to say it. Like every culture says it differently. And I just think it's kind of silly because I don't.
Can I say Ahmed?
I don't know how to say Ahmed. My name. Basically is what it comes down to. I don't know how to say my name. Ahmed. So whenever anyone says, how do I say your name? I just said, well, however you feel comfortable saying it, just say it. Because I think because like Ahmed is like such a universal, like it's like Smith, like it's a name that's been appropriated by like all these different cultures and everyone kind of says it their own way. So it's been so appropriated that there's no real way to say it.
You know, whenever you say appropriated, it just makes me feel really uncomfortable. It's a divisive term. I would just prefer if you said, like, you know, I adapted or I assimilated or I monetized. Like, if you said I monetized off of it, that feels more like positive. I capitalized
on this. what's your awkward ask a Muslim?
I was thinking about my awkward ask a Muslim. Okay, so here's my awkward ask a Muslim, which I feel like some of our listeners might love. It's hard for me to call myself the pork-eating Muslim now because of the Mother Jones article.
Why?
Because they talked about the, like, horrendous treatment of these pigs. And Duncan, my husband, who, you know, has been telling me since I met him to not eat pork, which is so funny because he's atheist, right? He's been telling me forever to not eat pork because of the mistreatment and because pigs are, like, with their DNA... are super close to humans.
So wait, are you saying you're not eating pork anymore?
I ate pork yesterday, though.
But it makes you feel guilty now in a way that it's never had before?
I feel shame around it now in a way that I didn't before.
Oh, that's really fascinating. So basically, you are becoming more Muslim, is what it sounds like. You've been Muslimfied.
Well, I'm going to cross my arms and say, if... imposing shame over my dietary choices is Muslimifying me, then fine, I'll accept that.
We need a link to this Mother Jones article.
Yeah, we'll have that up for you guys so that you can share it with your friends and say, see, Muslims were right.
Creeping
Sharia creeps into awkward ask a Muslim. All right, so what is our good Muslim award that we're going to give here?
We are going to give it to a high school senior. Who
is awesome.
Is awesome.
She was in BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed's title is great. The BuzzFeed Hijabi Girl, whose senior yearbook quote went viral. She wrote in her senior quote, it cracked me up. You can, there'll be a link to this on our website. She wrote, "The only reason why I wear this bracketed hijab is to give you females a chance."
So awesome.
That's hilarious.
It's so funny.
But the reason why I nominated her for our Good Muslim Award is because of her response. She wrote in response to people saying, you know, hey, how come you're putting girls down? She just said, you know, there are a very small handful of people saying I'm putting girls down, but I'm really not. And she just left it at that and, you know, said that her notoriety has brought out some racist trolls. And that's it. And I... just love that this girl didn't take on any of the shame that people tried to swing her way, whether it was through, you know, the like ideas of feminism and you're putting women down, or whether it was racist trolls trying to put her down for her religion or her ethnicity or both when it comes to Islam. It just means both. She didn't take any of that in, and she was just like, no, I'm still going to be awesome, and I still have awesome responses, and I'm going to graduate and be awesome. Have an awesome time. And she gave us a new catchphrase that I didn't even know about. This is like a reminder that we're not millennials, Tess.
Speak for yourself. What did she say?
She wrote, I'm getting a lot of slay. That's in quotes because that's like a term now. I'm getting a lot of slay and goat comments. G-O-A-T, the acronym.
Oh my gosh. As in. Greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time. This makes,
what was our first hashtag? Just eat a goat. This makes just eat a goat like all that much more special.
I know. It's like a just eat a goat upgrade.
Oh my gosh. Goat. I'm going to use just eat a goat. I don't know if that'll work, but I'm going to use it now even more.
I feel like I think I'm just going to adapt hers and monetize it or appropriate it or take it or steal it.
So I think one of the interesting things about this is, like, when you're a senior in high school, they ask you to put quotes in your yearbook. And I think just I think both Zara and I went to high school in the U.S. And I think one of the interesting things is, like, growing up, like, I don't think either of us felt that empowered to, like, come out and be so brazen in our yearbook. I think there's been a lot of shifting that's been going on since we were in high school. So it's really cool to see young Muslim women being so YOLO about this. So good yep. Muslim award. What's her name? Rafika Alami.
Yep. Good Muslim award. All right, time to declare a fatwa.
I don't have a fatwa to declare this time. Oh, but I do want to say the last time we declared a fatwa on spiders, and I did get an email about that one.
You did?
Spiders in Islam are considered a sacred animal, actually.
Oh, that's right.
One of the myths that we have in Islam is that when the Prophet was escaping people that were trying to kill him, he ran into a cave and the spider came and made it look like built a web in front of him to make it look like he had never, like no one had ever entered the cave. So that's a myth that I actually grew up with, which is why I carry so much shame when I'm killing spiders, but I still do. Because I live in California and we have black widows here and I'm really scared to death of black widows.
Okay, I have two fact checks for you on that story.
Sure.
Number one, it's not a myth. It's a fact. It's a thing that occurred.
Okay.
Okay. And then number two, just because Muhammad didn't kill that spider doesn't mean we can't kill all other spiders.
That was Zara that said that, not me. Just want to clarify. Just the way she's a pork eating Muslim, she's also the one that said that about the spiders. What's your fatwa?
Eyes shifting. Okay, I have a fatwa. Oh my God, talk about shame. We were guests on the Bitch Media podcast, which was a huge highlight, you know, in our journey with Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. I'm such a fan of Bitch Media.
Oh, huge fan. I used to have to sneak into the library when I was a kid to read it.
Because it says bitch.
Yeah.
And I was on there with Taz recently. We were talking about our guilty pleasures with Sarah Merck. And I said that my guilty pleasure was Game of Thrones. And I feel so betrayed. I feel guilty-er after the rape of Sansa Stark and the way that they shot that. I'm so angry about
it. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, not really at all a spoiler alert because everybody saw it coming. And yet they felt the need to show that from Theon's perspective. I'm not even going to go into it.
Okay, so I don't watch Game of Thrones. Can you give me like a quick like 30-second primer?
Yeah, here it is. Fancy talk, fancy talk, fancy talk. Kill, kill, kill. Rape, rape, rape. Fancy talk, fancy talk, fancy talk. And that's Game of Thrones.
Thanks.
No problem. Fatwa on Game of Thrones until they fix this. So that has been Good Muslim and Bad Muslim for you. We had fun.
Yeah, we had fun. I do want to do a quick little shout out. We have been in the media a lot. Thanks to Arun Roth at All Things Considered Weekend Edition. You can listen to that audio on our website. Big ups to SiriusXM's John Fugelsang for having both of us on to do an interview.
And Frank Conniff of MST3K. Oh my God, one of my favorite shows. Also, he was a writer for Sabrina the Teenage Witch. How cool is that?
How did you find that out? That's so awesome.
Because I am a nerd. I'm a huge nerd.
Who else should we give shout outs to?
Can I just say double shout out to Arun Rath because he had a whole conversation with us about having weird names.
Yeah.
And that was surreal and awesome.
Yeah. I feel kind of bad about that conversation because I kind of jokingly was talking about how NPR reporters make their name sound white. And then I realized that could have been picked up as an insult. So sorry, Arun. And big ups to Bitch Media for having both of us on to talk about our guilty pleasures. My guilty pleasure was Christmas movies, but you can listen to the whole podcast. We'll have a link to learn more about that.
And big shout out to our parents because we're talking about sex and shame in our old childhood homes looking at our yearbooks right now.
Yeah, this is our first podcast that we're recording over Skype. So things sound a little funny. It's because we're not in person. So thanks for listening. Zara, are you doing anything this next month?
Yeah, I have two shows coming up. One at Babylon in San Francisco. I'll be reading. I'll be, it looks like, at Litquake in October. I'm doing a show at Dartmouth. Check out all of my shows and where to go and where to hear me at ZaraComedy.com. My Infidel Husband column will be coming out soon, and that'll also be linked on our website. How about you, Tess? When's your next Radical Love column?
So my next Radical Love column is coming out the first Wednesday of every month. So that'll be out in a week. And go to my website at tazzystar.blogspot.com. I'll usually link to things that I'm working on there. I'm trying to do a life revamp, so hopefully I'll be putting out more art and more writing soon.
Hey, Taz, you're my goat friend. Greatest of all time.
You're my goat friend, too.
Hearts.
Hearts. All right, bye.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at ZaraNu, that's ZaHRANOO. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
Fancy talk, fancy talk, fancy talk, kill, kill, kill.